Time for a regular Thursday chat with Chris Johnston, our Sportsnet NHL insider, and we've got big news to get to with CJ this afternoon. Big news in the NHL, Mr. Johnston. Let's get right to it. There's a number of different areas to hit, but let's start with the fact that the players and the league have decided that they are going to reseed in the playoffs, and it will not be a bracket format. Tell us about that, the reasoning behind that, and why the league and the players are going that way.
Well, I think really this comes down to what the players want, and that's probably notable in itself that the league left that decision up to those guys, and you know, I think that they felt it was the most fair way to go about it. If you remember, since 2014, when we went to the divisional playoff format, you know, it became a bracket scenario, and so that's been the normal, I guess, the last few years. And you know, it's a little easier for scheduling, but probably a little less fair. You know, I think what makes it especially interesting is that the top four seeds are now being decided by a three-game round robin, because it makes the seeding more important. You know, if say the 12th team in the West, Chicago, wins against Edmonton, well, you know, you'd probably rather play them in the first round of the playoffs. It gives something, I guess, to whoever comes out first in that seeding. So, you know, the way they've come about it is the league left a lot up to the players. And, you know, I do think it's an important step, because now we know exactly what the playoffs look like if they're able to play them.
Let's delve into that, the four-team round robin, and the fact that it will determine seeding. The only advantage the number one seed gets is the fact that in a tiebreak, they will get or any of the higher seeds get in a tiebreak, points percentage from the regular season will decide it. So on the one hand, you say, well, geez, Boston could drop from number one to number four in the Eastern Conference despite having a huge lead. But on the other side, and something that has been brought up, I think, a lot and we talked about last hour, is the fact that if you want to allow these four teams that are in the playoffs to get some actually important and meaningful warm-up time coming in, you probably have to make the games mean something, don't you?
Right. You can't achieve every game. You know, I mean, we all face this in different things in our life. You want to do everything at once. Well, the truth is you can only address certain things at certain times. And so, you know, one of the biggest complaints from teams and players, or biggest points of feedback, was that they were concerned that those games wouldn't mean anything. You know, Tampa was one of the two teams that voted against this playoff format, because they were worried that when they get to their first round matchup, when you're down to 16 teams, that they wouldn't have played meaningful games until that happens. Well, the only way to make that happen then is to have those round robin games count. It's certainly not fair in the context of 85% of the season being played, and a team like Boston with an 8 or 10 point lead over most of the conference, but, you know, potentially winning the President's Trophy and being the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. But I don't think there's no way to do both. You're either going to respect what those 85% of the regular season said, or you're going to say, well, we need these teams to play meaningful games. Well, this is the way to do it. And so, you know, I do think that there's an element, as we've kind of hit on all along, as we've talked about the playoff format, of you've got to accept some inequalities. Well, this is a clear inequality, especially when it pertains to the Bruins, because they had such a big lead in the East, and now, you know, they're at the same standing as Philadelphia, that I think won 10 in a row just before the season paused, just to get into the top four. You know, they certainly weren't one of the top teams in the conference all year long the way Boston was, and now they have the same chance of being number one in the division or at the conference.
How significant is it for you, whether it be for integrity's sake or for, as you mentioned on Twitter today, adding an extra 9 days to the calendar, how significant is it that the NHL has decided that all four playoff rounds will be best of sevens?
Well, I understand it because of the integrity argument. I think that the players are sort of the view, if we're going to go through all this, whoever wins the cup, you know, you don't want anyone saying, well, it didn't really count, or, you know, it was only best of fives here, so it's not the same as a normal cup. I think the idea, and of course, the feeling won't be the same as a normal cup, but I think the way it's viewed historically is important to the players if they're going to go through this exercise, that the team that does win has earned their place there. And so that's how you end up with four best of seven series. What I think is interesting is that, you know, it does add 9 days on to a time frame that's still very fluid, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit, but in general, we still don't know exactly when the small group workouts start. We don't know exactly when the training camps start. We don't know when the first game of the playoffs is, but we do know from that first game of the playoffs, it could be 68 days until the cup's handed out. And if you start, you know, working through the math there, I think the NHL is going to be in a tough spot here to get the Stanley Cup awarded, you know, by the end of October. And so, you know, it is significant to add those extra days on as part of agreeing to this format, because those days might come to seem pretty long. You know, if we get into October and there's a second wave, say, I mean, look, you're just introducing some factors we don't know about.
Right.
In a landscape as uncertain as this, right?
Absolutely. And I did find it interesting that they decided to go down that road. And I think there were really compelling reasons on both sides to keep it best of five in the first two rounds or go best of seven in those two rounds as well. We're talking with Chris Johnston, our NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays here on Pinder and Steinberg. When talking about the timeline, do we have there's been some conflicting reports on social media today about the training camps won't start as early as July 10th and that they might start as early as July 10th. Do we have any definitive update as to where things rest right now with the timing and the process of this whole thing?
Well, I think this is where the division has come in, is that the conversation has been had. You know, maybe August 1st is when we open camps. I mean, there's at least been that discussion. I certainly don't think anything's been agreed upon that way. And so, you know, I think maybe if we want to call it confusion or, you know, lack of clarity has hit the situation, is that that's definitely a possibility, but the league is still hopeful to open camps by the middle of July. And so, you know, at this point, that would be the official position, is that they're trying to get camps open by, you know, say July 14th, July 15th. But it's certainly, I think, well within the realm of possibility that you don't see those training camps open until August 1st. So I don't think anyone's wrong or right in this situation. I think it's more, there's a little bit of ambiguity in what's going on and the timeframes involved and all the hoops here. But, you know, I will say this, I can't imagine them finishing this season with a training camp that starts much later than the start of August. And so, you know, if we want to center the discussion on something that's meaningful, you know, I mean, to me, that's where it starts, is that, yeah, we might be arguing between July 14th and August 1st, but I don't see training camp starting too much later than that and the season being finished because of how much time it's going to take. And so we really are entering a critical window where those dates will matter, you know, where the progression to phase two, which I think is going to be next week, you know, kicks into gear and those types of things. And so, you know, I would say at this point, the middle of July is possible, but I wouldn't rule out the start of August is when we actually see those camps start.
Okay, well, and the crazy part about all of this is that we're talking about a return to play, which is phase four of the NHL's plan. Technically, we're still in phase one right now, CJ. Do we have an update as to officially when phase two, and that is the reopening of team facilities and the ability for players to get back to team facilities if they choose? Do we have an update on when that is going to be enacted?
Well, it's going to be next week, and I can't give you an exact date because there's some complexities there, you know, mostly around that not every team is sure they want to open phase two. I mean, this is where it gets truly weird, right? I mean, some teams have three or four players in their market, and there's a cost to this, right? I mean, to having an NHL ice sheet, to resurfacing it, to doing the cleaning protocols. I mean, there's a pretty heavy commitment. I mean, even some teams have told me at this point, the testing that's available to them is $200 or $300 a pop. Well, I mean, you're supposed to be testing these players certainly before they start and then at least twice a week. And, you know, so I think some teams have not been as anxious maybe to get to phase two as others. I mean, other teams certainly have 10 or 12 or 15 members of their team in the market and want to get it going. And so, you know, I think what the NHL is working through right now is trying to work with the teams that have concerns to get them in a position to where they are willing to go to phase two. And, you know, just really getting the ball to that point in time. And so, you know, I think there's a general understanding it could be as soon as Monday, but certainly next week will be when we see that the small group workouts happen. And, you know, I'm of the personal view that there's a symbolic element to that. I mean, yes, it doesn't change a whole lot. By this point, there's a lot of players everywhere skating around North America doing various activities. But, you know, that's the point where everybody, if they want to, can be back in their home city, can be skating at their team facility, can be working with strength coaches or athletic therapists or, you know, be in the team environment. And so, you know, I think that that will happen now in the very near future, but I can't tell you if it's going to be Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. I think that's still sort of being finalized, but we're at the point where the teams are bracing to open those facilities again.
Of all of this, and I'm curious your thought on this, but I mean, the NHL made these announcements today, and you've told us for weeks now that some of the decisions are going to be left up to the players, and the league left up the reseeding or bracket, best of five, best of seven, and even how long the training camp is eventually going to be. That's all been left in the players' hands, and the league has said, we trust you to make the right decision. Is that maybe the most significant part of all of this is how much trust there seems to be between the two sides right now?
I would say so. I don't know if we chalk that up to, like, this is such an unforeseen event. Like, none of us have ever lived through anything quite like this. So maybe it's a sign of that. But certainly I've never in my years covering the NHL seen so much of the – I mean, look at it. It's the way relationships should work. I mean – I rely on you for certain things. You rely on me for certain things. But, I mean, it hasn't always been that way between the league and the players. And it certainly has been during this. And you know, I think what still remains to be seen is how it works out with the CBA talks. Because, you know, from what I've heard, especially lately, there's been a lot of discussion directly between Donald Fehr and Gary Bettman. I think that they've been on the phone together a fair bit here the last little while. And you know, obviously they're working through the same kind of conversations we're having and they're making those decisions, but I think they understand as well that a new CBA or an extension of the CBA is likely to be part of this return. And, you know, that might be part of it. Because I do think the NHL, even going back to last year, before most of us had heard of COVID-19 or the coronavirus or had any idea of what's, you know, this has done to this season, you know, the NHL was being pretty deferential, I would say, in discussions that happened last summer. And I do think the league has been consistent in trying to, you know, move forward, I guess, from the past where lockouts were automatic because, you know, the last number of negotiations, that was the case. And, you know, so I think that what we're seeing here is, yes, probably the extreme end of these circumstances that the league is letting the players make some key decisions. And just saying outright, okay, you choose between X and Y. It's up to you totally. You tell us which one it is, and that's what we'll go with. I mean, that's new. But I think it also exists in this climate where these two sides are going to have to make some deeper, larger, bigger agreements. And you know, those could come, I think, in the next few weeks here as part of the general return to play package.
What in terms of big issues, because, you know, you've talked about how one of the offshoots of this might be, you know, accelerated CBA talks and getting to those quicker. So in saying that, what are some of the key issues and big things that are being discussed right now and some of the sticking points that would be being discussed in trying to extend a CBA?
I think the biggest one, quite honestly, is going to be how the escrow is handled. And I know that most people hear that word and their eyes glaze over and it's like you're back in grade 12 math class again and you don't want to hear it. But essentially, if we want to put it in different terms, you know, this pandemic and what it's done to this season has huge implications financially for both the owners and players. And so to put it in different terms, I think it's how do we get through this where both sides are looked after, where players want to come back and play next season, even though we're not playing to full houses and you're not getting your full contract and all those types of things. I think how they handle the transition from this distress period to, you know, what we hope will be something approximating normal in the near future and how the players, you know, are docked for that, because that's essentially the way that the system works. I mean, you get paid 50% of what the owner's revenues are. You know, if it doesn't matter if your contract says $12 million, if the revenues are way down, you're getting $6 million instead. These aren't guaranteed contracts in the traditional sense of the word, the way it would be with our employers. So I think that will be a huge determining factor is how essentially the league and the players come up with a system to get through this troubled period, to preserve players' contracts as best as possible under those circumstances, to give them a reason to want to play, and to get back to normal together. And I do think that's all possible. It's a complex set of negotiations or ideas. And, you know, those haven't all been negotiated at this point. But you know, it's pretty notable when the commissioner and the head of the players union are talking on a daily basis or twice daily basis as they are right now. I think that there's a lot of balls in the air, and I do certainly think that that's a possible outcome here in addition to the return to play that, that we're all hoping for.
They're talking that often right now, hey?
Yeah, it's a lot. And again, a lot of it isn't just, I mean, they're talking about probably, hey, this Team X doesn't want to open phase two and Team Y does want to, you know, like it's not all, you know, it's not all deep in the mud CBA stuff. But I do think that both sides recognize it's probably in their best interest to try to get this done if they can. You know, it's 2022 when the CBA expires, so it doesn't have to be done. But, you know, this is a good time to renew your faith to each other. It's almost like a second marriage, you know, under troubled times. It's looking to reestablish what the rules are going to be and why you're working together, because, you know, both sides are taking a hit here, whether they play or not. I mean, this is going to have a financial toll on both ends of that relationship.
Final thought for you, and that's kind of, I mean, all along, I think that you've been probably the most realistic, and I don't want to say pessimistic, because you never really have been pessimistic. You've just been realistic about this whole thing and where the NHL fits in a worldwide pandemic. Knowing what you're hearing right now and who you're talking to right now, where is your optimism level that this ends up actually happening and that we're talking about hockey, whether it's being played in late July or early August or whatever the case may be? What's Chris Johnston's optimism level like right now?
Well, I'm still above 50-50, so I think that counts as optimism. Maybe 70-30 in favor of it happening. And, you know, the biggest thing that gives me optimism is I sense, you know, truly almost what we're talking about here, a real desire at the NHL level to work through every single issue that comes about. I don't see them imposing anything on players that they don't want. I think that they understand the safety issue. And a key thing, which, you know, I mentioned on Tuesday night during our hit, but I believe the testing has largely been, you know, solved at this point. That they're pretty confident they have the availability and access to testing they need to make this whole thing work if it starts. So there's a lot in place. But what has me only nervous is just that there's a lot going on. And I do think we're getting to the point, it's not to say this week is the deadline or next week's the deadline where we have to know everything, but we are getting to the stage where some firm dates need to be committed to, right, or else it's not going to happen. You know, we're not opening training camp on August 22nd and seeing the Stanley Cup awarded this season, I don't believe. I think it's just too much time would need to be had from that stage. And so, you know, it's getting warm where I am. It's summer here. You know, this is normally somewhere around, what, game four of the Stanley Cup final, roughly, give or take. And so, you know, I think that everyone understands that this has to happen within a pretty fine window at this point for it to go off. And so, you know, I'm going to bet on the willingness of the league, the intelligence of the people at the top, and the desire, I think, that overall is there to get it done. But, you know, there's still a lot of questions without an answer, and time is not, you know, time is a flat circle for all of us individually, but it's not for what their kind of decisions that are being made. And
yeah,
so that's why I can't say 100% I'm confident we'll see it, but I'm going to go with 70-30, at least as we're talking today, Pat.
Okay, and I lied. I do have one more, and it just hit me right
sure.
now. I meant to ask this a little earlier, and I wanted to make sure that I did get it in before we bid you adieu until next Tuesday. But that is, okay, let's just say that everything goes according to plan. July 10th, training camps, and July 31st or something like that, play-in series starts, and
right,
sometime in early October they award the Stanley Cup. Next season starts in January, and that goes until July. What does the following season look like, the 2021-2022 season? What is that on a different calendar too? Are we talking about permanently a shifted calendar in the NHL, or do you see the NHL at some point in the near future getting back to the traditional October to June that we've been used to?
I see a slight shift happening, but I don't think it's going to be a reinvention. And
okay,
I'll tell you this, the 2021 Stanley Cup will be handed out before the Tokyo Olympics start. And I don't have the date in front of me, but it's somewhere in the sort of later part of July. So I would say roughly by July 15th, 2021, the next Stanley Cup will be handed out after this one. And as a result of that, yeah, there's going to be an altered off season. Maybe the puck drop on the new season doesn't start until late October. And I do think there's new possibilities that the league is willing to look at here, but I don't think we're going to see a January start, August Stanley Cup as a normal pattern. I mean,
okay,
I'll own that if I'm wrong. I think you'll see a shift because a lot of American teams don't love October as a time to have regular season home games. But I don't see us starting it as a rule, let's say in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time, you know, much later than early November or late October. I think that you'll see a slight shift in one direction, but you know, I don't think we're going to reinvent the wheel here. Just my feel of things and my sense of where we're at.
Good stuff, my friend. I'm glad I got that question in because I did want to pick your brain on that. Enjoy your weekend, CJ. Outstanding stuff this week, as always. You've been killing it. Thanks for doing this, man.
All right, Pat. You too.